The Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meets tomorrow at the Rich and Services Building. On the phone with a preview of the agenda, I have staff planners Ray Milliner and Tiffany Robinson. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Tiffany, start with you. A couple of items with the Canyons Village area. The lofts at Blackstone Condominium Plat, two buildings, up to three stories, 60 multifamily units. Any issues here aside from the applicant wanting to condominiumize?
No, this is pretty straightforward. The Blackstone final site plan was approved back in 2014 and established the use and the density on these properties. This is more of the formality of just condominiumizing the two buildings that are currently under construction for ownership purposes.
All right. And the location of that is where?
That is located on what is considered LV4, which is a Lower Village plat, Lot 4, down just off of Lower Village Road, near Hole 13 of the Canyons Golf Course.
All right. And then we've got White Pine Canyons Village Plan. This has 30 multifamily units up to 2.5 stories tall. The report says that the Planning Commission looked at this last fall and had some concerns over connectivity, lighting, ADA accessibility. Has the applicant resolved all that?
It appears that they have. They did go back and revise many of those issues and address many of those issues that were brought to light last fall when this was addressed. And, you know, they've modified the lighting to comply with the current Snyderville Basin Development Code as far as lighting standards. They've connected the sidewalks throughout the property and to make sure there's a connection to the adjacent Millennium Trail for access and to the golf cart path that exists through the site today. And this particular site is located on LV10, which is just north of this Blackstone project we just talked about, which is very close, just off of Lower Village Road, very close to White Pine Canyon Road as well. It's kind of on that little bit of a corner to the north end of Lower Village Road.
All right. Looking ahead, are the work sessions done with the Snyderville Commission on Canyon's Spa Master Plan? I mean, we've got a public hearing set for next week, April 18th. So will the Planning Commission be meeting 3 weeks in a row here?
They are having a special meeting next week. We have had several very heavy agendas, and so they did agree to have a special meeting on the 18th to address some of the larger topics. We do have the Canyons Master Plan. First public hearing will be held next week along with a couple of other larger public hearings that day, and then they'll be meeting again the 25th. Don't know the exact agenda for the 25th, but the first public hearing for the Canyons Master Plan Amendment will be next week.
All right. And is that the only item then on that special agenda?
No, there are two other items. There's a public hearing for the Aspen Creek Crossing, especially Planned Area Development Agreement Amendment, and also the County Natural Resources Plan, I believe.
All right. Will this be the only opportunity then for the public next week? Are you saying the 25th as well? To comment on Canyons Village.
We don't have a public hearing on the 25th. We do have a regular meeting on the 25th, but there will be another public hearing. We do not anticipate that any action will be taken at all next week, just taking public comment and then going forward at a later date for another public hearing.
Okay. Hey, Tiffany, thanks for your time. Ray, let's turn to you. Woodward Goza is back. This will be in work session. The Planning Commission continuing its review of the location's prior approval. So looking at the uses requested by Woodward, were these allowed back in the 1999 approval?
Yeah, most of the uses that are proposed were allowed. There's one use that wasn't specifically called out in that development agreement, and that is the camper cabins. And what the camper cabins would be is a location for kids when they come to train at the facility to stay for like a week if you came like to summer camp. And so one of the issues we're going to discuss tomorrow is whether or not there's a use on the use table in the Hillside Stewardship Zone that would apply, and so they could go under that zone. The two uses that they're looking at are campground or just quote camp.
All right.
And the camp would. So
at this point, we don't know if these cabins are allowed in the Hillside Stewardship Zone?
We've given them the two definitions, and we're going to ask the Planning Commission to look at that and give us some direction as to whether or not they would be allowed. So that's one of the things we're going to discuss at the meeting.
All right. So should this be processed as a conditional use permit or a rezone?
Well, there's two options. The way the applicant has chosen to approach it is through a conditional use. There is a venue or a method through the conditional use process that they can use, and so they've chosen to go that way.
All right. You'll also be discussing traffic issues. Anything in particular?
we're just going to start the traffic discussion. The applicant has given us a pretty extensive traffic assessment plan, and so we're going to open that up, look at it, get some comments from the Planning Commission, and then address any issues that come up.
So any improvements anticipated to Kilby Road?
Not at this point. There could be some discussion about that, some improvements that come from the analysis and discussion, but not at this point.
All right. And then reading the traffic study, I mean, what do you see in it?
Looking at it, I see a lot of numbers, and I see a lot of information that we need to hash out. The base finding of the traffic report was that Kilby Road has the capacity to handle the use. We've asked for some more numbers, like as far as impacts of number of users and changes in their plan that they've had since the traffic report was done. And so we're waiting for those numbers to come in, and then we'll make a final recommendation once we get that.
All right. When does this go to a public hearing?
We don't have a public hearing scheduled for it yet. We're going to go work through at least two more work sessions before we schedule it up for a public hearing. So.
Okay. Hey, Ray, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
That's Summit County Staff Planner Ray Milner. Students in the Logan School District will be able to sleep in a bit next school year. A change in class schedules at Logan High School has pushed the entire small district to later school start times. As Park City School District considers the same thing, we invited Superintendent of Logan Schools, Frank Schofield, to walk us through the process. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why did Logan School Board make the decision to start schools later?
Well, we're aware of the research on the impact of school time on children, particularly adolescents, and how they do perform better at a later start time. We began the conversation last year as we were considering a change to our overall bell schedule. The school is currently on an 8-period-day schedule, and we were looking at switching to an AB block schedule where they have 4 classes a day. And as we were examining that and having conversations with community and staff, one of the questions that came up was, well, if we're going to make a change anyway, can we consider moving our start time a little bit later? Our current start time is 7:30 in the morning, and the discussion was whether we could move it to 8. So over the last year, as we've been preparing for that schedule, we decided, you know what, we know there are benefits to this for our students. Let's see if there's a way we can implement it with the resources and the structures that we have.
So do you think that additional half hour will make a difference, or now kids just go to bed a half hour later?
Well, I don't think it's going to change bedtimes or sleeping schedules significantly for students, but it does provide a little more time in the morning, I guess you could say, for people to get up to speed, for students to get going. I have a son who's currently a freshman at the high school, and a little bit of extra time in the morning would not do him harm in terms of being prepared and ready to start the day.
Yeah. So how does this impact the lower grades?
For our lower grades, what we've done is it does move our elementary start times back a little bit, depending on the school. Our bus schedules create a couple of different tiers because we have a shared busing agreement with the Cache County School District. So we have our high school start time. We have 2 groups of elementary schools, 3 in each. One of those groups will be about 5-10 minutes later than they are currently, and the other will be closer to 15-20 minutes, actually about closer to 30 minutes later than their current start time. And then our middle school will be starting about 15 minutes later than they currently do. So everybody's start time moved a little bit further back, but not as much as the high school's time does.
Yeah, that's one of the issues here in Park City is that we're also talking about moving start times back, but the concern is traffic. We've got a lot of people coming into town that same time that the high school buses would be coming into town, and you know, there's thought that, well, any difference, I mean, the kids were going to just now be late. What kind of traffic concerns did you have there in Logan?
What we did is Our primary traffic concern here in Logan is if you're on Main Street. If your listeners are familiar with Cache Valley, there are two primary arteries that go north-south, and one of them is Main Street. That becomes very crowded at your, you know, high-volume commuter times. Most of our bus routes go around Main Street, so it doesn't create as big of a concern as I believe it does in certain areas of Park City, especially as you start looking at the winter traffic with people going to the resort.
Yes.
As we worked with the transportation department, we gave them our proposal of start times, and we said, is there a way to make this work? They took it back. They ran their simulations, looked at the coordination with the other schools in the valley, and they said, yeah, we can make these times work if we stay within certain these specific windows. So that's how we were able to put it together. So because many of our bus routes go off of Main Street as opposed to have to deal with the Main Street traffic, it wasn't as big of an issue for us as it might be in some other communities.
Yeah. So you did run some test routes as part of the assessment.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you going to have to hire more bus drivers and purchase more buses?
No, that was one of the, I guess you could say, one of the criteria we needed to meet. Because we do this as a joint venture with Cache District, and we share the costs, and we take turns purchasing the buses and paying for drivers. As we did that, we said, okay, if we're going to do this, we have to come up with a bus schedule that allows us to use our existing resources and does not create scheduling conflicts for the other district. Part of our one of the unwritten components of our agreement is that if one district is going to change their start times or their bus schedules, it has to be done in a way that minimizes the impact on the other district. It has to be coordinated. So those are some of the things that we considered as we put the plan together.
Yeah, it sounds like, though, it got shoehorned in pretty well.
It actually worked incredibly well for us. And part of that is because of the schedule we were currently running. Our school day was longer on our current schedule than it will be next year. And part of that is because an intervention time period was plugged into the school schedule. So that added an additional 30 minutes to the school day, which, you know, of course, started school a little bit earlier and spread it out a little bit later in the afternoon. With the move to longer class periods on the AB block, that intervention time will be incorporated into the regular classes. So we didn't have to add that additional period, so that allowed us to condense the day a little bit, which allowed us to move forward with still consolidating our bus schedule.
So did you move to that block schedule then to allow for the later start time, or does the block schedule really make a difference educationally for students?
We believe, as we've looked at the evidence on the block schedule, that as we look at schools that are in the state of Utah that are high performing and where students have a variety of both curricular and extracurricular options, the AB schedule provides some flexibility that a 7 or 8 period day does not. That especially becomes a factor when you start tying in release time seminary or students who want to take a high AP class load. You'll find across the state our highest performing AP schools have that schedule because of the number of curricular options it provides for kids. So some form of a block schedule, either a 4x4 or a 5x5. Those are the reasons why we started investigating the schedule and made the decision to move to it. The ability to start school a little bit later was one of, although it wasn't the primary motivator for selecting the schedule, it was one of the additional benefits that we saw we could create for kids.
All right. So talk a little bit about, does this impact athletic participation, competitions, especially those away games?
For us, it won't. And we've been very fortunate. Next year, our athletic region is going to just be Cache Valley and one school in the Box Elder School District, Bear River High School. So the furthest commute we'll have for athletics will probably be a 20 to 30 minute bus ride. The rest of our competitions are all in Valley. So we're talking 10 minutes, you know, just 10 minutes away. So for us, in a region of that size and just how we're geographically situated, it's not going to require us to increase the amount of time that athletes are missing from school or that as students participate in debate competitions, we're not going to have to increase the amount of class time they're missing due to increased travel. I know down in Park City, that's a very different situation where you're going from Tooele out to the Uinta Basin.
Yeah.
And travel becomes a much bigger issue.
And in terms of the cost to implement it, you said you didn't need to buy any new buses. So is there any additional cost to it?
As we've run the models for us, we don't have an additional cost. Now, I know one of the things that has come up that we did look at as we decided we were considering, would there be a way for us to move our middle school and our high school to a similar start time and have the elementaries start even later? And the primary reason for that is the goal of, in the middle of winter, not having, you know, six-year-olds standing outside in the snow waiting for a bus, you know, in the dark. The challenge we ran into there was because our high school and our middle school both require a high number of buses to pick up the kids, to do that we would have to purchase a significant number of additional buses, and that would create an additional cost for the district. So if you wanted to say having two start times, a secondary start time and an elementary start time, that was something we considered, but that was cost prohibitive for the district. So all we were able to do was move everyone's start back time back just a little.
All right. So has there been any pushback from teachers, the community?
Not really from teachers. The initial request for this really came from the staff. Came from the teachers at the high school saying, if we're going to do this, can we start a little bit later and give some credence to this research that's out there. There are some concerns from some of our working parents. Obviously, work schedules don't always align with school start times. And as you move school start times back a little bit later, that can create some additional challenges for working parents. So what we're trying to do is work with our schools to make sure we have the resources and the structures to provide some before-school supervision for those students whose parents do have to go to work early and they don't have another option for getting their children to school.
Oh, okay. So it sounds like you've got it all worked out, ready to go, huh?
Well, that might be a bit of an overstatement. I hesitate to ever say we have anything all worked out, but we feel pretty confident with what we have in place and where we're headed.
Okay. Well, again, we appreciate your insight into this. Frank Schofield is the superintendent of the Logan School District. Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome. Have a wonderful day.
It's 8:40. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Repertory Dance Theater performing two shows in Park City this week at the Egyptian Theater. On the phone with details is Linda Smith. She's the artistic director for RTD. Good morning, Linda.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks. So we've got two shows, Friday and Saturday, 8 p.m. at the Egyptian. What are we going to see?
An amazing evening-length work by Zvi Gottheiner, who's an Israeli-American choreographer, who has been a part of RDT's history since the early 1990s. We have commissioned him to create five different works for us, and also he sets work from his own company on us, and Debka is one of those works. It is an amazing work.
So I see on the Egyptian Theater page, it describes Debka as heavy fare, not necessarily for younger audience members, maybe not family-friendly. It addresses adult themes of conflict, community, and the hope for peace. So what should we expect to see?
Well, you know, last year when we were at the Egyptian, we did a very kind of family-friendly, all-ages welcome. And we just like to let the audience know that this is what I call meat and potatoes dance. You know, it's very hearty, it's very direct, it's absolutely an amazing theatrical experience. But because it's an evening-length work, you know, that sometimes challenges the attention spans of little ones. But it's the kind of work that you really want to get into and concentrate, and it's very fulfilling. We just performed three concerts in Salt Lake City at the Rose Wagner to standing audiences. They were just bowled over. So it's really one of those experiences that people won't want to miss.
All right. So no intermissions, just straight dancing?
No intermissions, go straight through. There is a little video, an interview with the choreographer that explains the creative process and why he created this work. And actually, he did create it because initially his reaction to the Arab Spring movement, where the Middle East was really on its way to regime changes and looking for a little more democratic society where people had economic changes and political changes, and it was very hopeful. That has dissipated, as we know, but there is this sense of not only conflict in the Middle East, but all over the world, where we're facing you know, people with different ideas about territory, about religion, about culture, and even family. You know, there is conflict, but there is a sense of hope, and it's very beautiful and very passionate.
So how many dancers performing in the piece?
We have 8 dancers, and we've been together many years. They really create distinctive portraits of humanity and people and what we yearn for and what frustrates us and what gives us joy. And they're very articulate, beautiful, beautiful dancers.
Wow, and I'm going to say that 8 dancers dancing for, what, 70, 80, 90 minutes, a testament to their fitness level.
They're really beautiful athletes as well as artists. And very articulate. And the thing that we've really noticed from audiences who see this is they can relate on a very deep personal level. The dancers really show their heart and soul and are very generous with delivering a message about humanity and understanding as well as conflict. It's really a piece about all of us.
All right. Again, RDT, you've been doing this for more than 50 years now. I think you celebrated your anniversary last year.
Yes, our 50th anniversary last year, and we're just full of energy and optimism, and we love performing, especially in Utah. We're so delighted to perform in Park City, and I think that this relationship, I hope, is ongoing so that we can connect with people all over Utah as well as all over the country.
All right. Well, tickets start at just $19, so quite the deal. People can get more information online at parkcityshows.com. Linda, good luck, and thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's Linda Smith, the Artistic Director of Repertory Dance Theater. It's 8:50. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the 2017 edition of the Park City Follies opens Thursday, April 20th. Many of the shows already sold out, so don't wait. On the phone to give us a preview of what to expect is one of the writers and the MC for the shows, Tom Clyde. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, hi, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So what's this year's theme?
Well, it's a little different this year. We're looking at Park City through the lens of a newcomer more than someone who's been here for a long time. And it's funny how the idea for how it comes together will hit. There was a letter to the editor, clear back last summer, from a couple who had bought a condo out at New Park and were deeply troubled by a new proposal for another condo project in the neighborhood because it would completely destroy the ambiance and character of the Kimball Junction area. And I thought, wow, if there's a character in the Kimball Junction area, there's a parody. So so that kind of got us started down one direction. And then just the general sense of busyness around town this winter sort of pushed in a different one. So we have those two subplots working with each other.
All right. Well, talk a little bit about the process for making this happen. I mean, how much work is involved on your part and the other of the creative team?
The other part of the creative team are just wonderful. Paul Tan is the director. Terry Moffat does the song lyrics. We have Andy Sear, who's a advertising and marketing guy by trade, helping with the writing and some of the videos. And Rick Klein does our video editing. And it's a great team that after doing it for so many years, we've got an awful lot of trust and confidence in each other, which makes it just a delight to pull it together because you know it'll happen. But we start in, really, in August was the is kind of when we start doing the groundwork. We do a barbecue at my house and sit around out here and talk about what's happening in town. And starting by mid-September, we are meeting at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, and starting to flesh out a script. It's always a scary process trying to decide in September what will be a hot topic or at least still a current topic in April. But so far, I think we've predicted it pretty well.
Yeah. Well, so basically, they just come up with ideas. You just kind of throw them and see what sticks, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of a messy process, and Paul finally insisted on bringing a little bit of order to it, so he's our Post-it notes guy, and he always shows up with a big accordion board of poster paper and slaps Post-it notes all over on how things go, and somehow from that a script emerges. But as I'm writing the script, it always goes off in its own direction. You know, the character will say something on my computer screen that I find even surprising and wonder where that came from. But yeah, so it's an interesting process, but it's literally a nine month exercise to bring this thing from the idea to getting it on stage. Rehearsals start tonight, and that's always a fascinating process for me because there'll be characters in the script that are, Chamber of Commerce board member number one, and Chamber board member number two, and that's about all the script says about who the character is. And by about Wednesday, those people will be fully formed, complicated, interesting characters because of what the cast brings to it.
All right, so the cast kind of knows what role they've got already.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we passed out scripts to cast a couple of weeks ago, and hopefully they'll be pretty much off book tonight and ready to go with lines. We've cut one rehearsal, which is terrifying, because we've added one show. The last couple of years have ended up with about a half-full house for what was the last rehearsal, and decided that since there was that kind of demand, we'd try and let the theater get one more night of ticket sales out of it. And so we're plunging ahead with one less rehearsal than normal, but that we'll see how that works.
Yeah, so you have a cast of about 35 is my guess. You've got more, of course, in the videos. And on stage will also be the person, my understanding, who won the KPCW auction to be on stage at the Volleys?
Right, right. We auction that off or donate that as part of your fundraiser. And it's amazing how that's worked out. We've ended up with a couple of real stars. Katrina Kamak came to us that way. This year's purchaser, I guess, or newcomer, is Bob Martin, and he was a little overwhelmed at the read-through and has got a number of small parts and is looking forward to it. So we'll see how that goes. And then I think the first one we did was Heather Pike, and Heather was in the show for 1 year, but her son Wyatt has now become a regular, and I don't know how we'd put the show on without Wyatt. So,
all right. Well, how hard is it to try and keep it Park City? I mean, with so much always to poke fun of on the state and national level.
We that's our goal, is to keep it as local as can be, and really, I think we've succeeded if somebody sitting there who doesn't live in the Park City area and isn't reading the paper and listening to the news on the radio, if they don't get it, I think we've got our focus right. I mean, it really is an inside look at things, and that is tough. People have said, "Oh, I guess you're just going to go off on Trump this year." I think I'm probably just not going to mention him at all. He's not in the script. Doesn't have anything really much to do locally. And so you just kind of tune those out.
Yeah. We should also note the retirement of Shelley Jennings, your pianist for the last decade or so. So you've got a new keyboard player and then I understand a new drummer because the drummer wanted to be on stage.
Yeah. Mark Conklin wanted to be on stage. So we have a new drummer who I've met but have not seen in action. And we have a new keyboard artist. Shelley just said that that many nights of her artificial arthritic hip sitting on a hard piano bench was just getting to be a little too much. And she continues to be very supportive and very helpful, and we'll miss her a lot. And I'm drawing a complete blank at the moment on Katie's last name, but Katie is our new keyboard artist, who I also have yet to see in action. But the musicians have been rehearsing on their own, and I guess tonight we'll start to see it all happen.
Okay. Again, the show opens up April 20th, and then we'll run two weekends, so Thursday through Sunday each week?
It's Thursday through Sunday the first week and Wednesday through Sunday the second week.
Wow, that's
so we've added that ninth show. I looked last night, and there are apparently about 140 tickets left, which is kind of overwhelming to me because this is the first sort of marketing we've done, this phone call this morning, and we're nearly sold out. So apparently there's a we got something working.
We all love to laugh at ourselves. So great job again, I'm sure. Looking forward to seeing it. Tom, anything else you want to tell our listeners?
No, just other than the night, it's an awful lot of work, and it's very satisfying to have the kind of community support we've had and continue to have. If we want to shoot at a business, the business owners are always, you know, more than welcoming to come in. And, oh, of course, it's for Follies. Sure, come in and disrupt my business for a couple of hours here. That's perfectly all right. So, that's great.
Yeah, I also wanted to note, I mean, you guys, none of you get paid for this, so it's all benefit to the Egyptian.
Yeah, the net proceeds just all go to the theater. There's very, very little production cost on it. And it's fun. If it wasn't fun, we wouldn't keep doing it.
Okay.